Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
Victor Davis Hanson, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. He's a classicist, and he joins me now for his article at American Greatness, identifying right now what appears to be discord in America. The word divisive is not adequate. The discord extends to our most important institutions, such as the Supreme Court, such as the U.S. government, the U.S. military. I begin, however, with universities, something Victor knows very well at Stanford and other teaching occupations he's had over the years. I only remember university through 5 decades of a very good time, learning what I didn't know and then forgetting it and then learning it again once I got out of university. But these days, to read the accounts of universities, it's a place of danger for professors and a kind of inchoate protest by very young people who are repeating slogans they've heard in the news or read somewhere. Victor, a very good evening to you. The picture I get of universities, and I'm sure it's too general, is that it is very dangerous for a professor who spent his or her whole life developing skills so that he or she can stand in front of a classroom. The professors must guard their tongue so much that it's a wonder they get through a lecture. Is that what it's like these days? Good evening to you, Victor.
Good evening, John. I think these days is the right word. I don't think it was that way just 10 years ago. I think the university's always been hard left in general. But in the last 10 years, this woke phenomenon made any expression of doubt or disagreement with the hard left almost a fireable offense, whether it's climate change or racial diversity or transgenderism. There are certain areas where you're not allowed to discuss anything in open debate. I think the American people will tolerate political intolerance if people are getting a good empirical education, inductive way of thinking, facts, knowledge, data, or they'll allow people to be apolitical. They'll welcome that if they're not so good. But when they're not so good on the actual instruction, but when you combine these sins of omission and commission, in other words, it's biased and it's people are incompetent. They're not teaching the basics of a classical education as we used to. Then I think the public has had it. And when they've had it, John, they start looking at things sort of like Disney in Florida that the university has had that we don't really have elsewhere. We don't have huge billion-dollar endowments that are not taxed. We don't have lifetime appointments with tenure that you really can't be fired except for political reasons these days. And we don't have things like racially separated graduations or racially separated dorms or safe spaces.
I've been reading about the Red Guards, 1966, and the spontaneous Red August, where classrooms, and especially the classrooms of the children of the elite, erupted into brutality, violence, mass murder, ranging over the country. It went on for 2 or 3 years. And they would be denouncing their teachers, their leadership, calling them capitalist roaders. It reminded me, as I was reading it, that what we're looking at is an echo of this same intolerance by young people, no, not mature people, young people who are incapable of drawing upon lifetime of experience. That was the Red Guard as well. Mao was cynical to launch them. Am I wrong to call an analogy to that, to use class warfare to turn the world upside down, and the people who are at fault many years later have profound regrets? It scars their life that they participated in such intolerance.
Yeah, I think there's an analogy. What's different about this revolution as opposed to the Cultural Revolution. That was an attack on an establishment, especially in the university. But this is often a top-down phenomenon. The aging 60s, 70s generation is in power, and they're the radicals. So if you take the Stanford Law School debacle where a federal judge was shouted down, it wasn't just the students that said horrible things to the judge, like "we'd like to rape your daughters," and disrupted his speech. An administrator hijacked the speech, took over the podium, and then gave a prepared ideological blast at the judge. And that's what we see throughout these university disruptions. It's the faculty and the diversity, equity, inclusion czars who are changing the curriculum or insisting on separate graduations or race-based repertory admissions. And so that's different. It's more like the French Revolution, where you have a Jacobin elite that's in concert with the street, so to speak.
I look to also a generality that your politics throughout your whole life tend to be what you absorbed when you were 21 years old. So my concern about universities is what are these young people learning? I'm presuming that the vast number, 99.9% of them, do not participate in this intolerance, these allegations, plain out denunciations. That's what they read like. And you talk to students all the time. Are they aware that what's going on around them is irregular and that it's not a life lesson?
Some are, but what I do is when I speak at universities or I have visiting appointments, the first thing I do is go to the bookstore and I look at the names of courses and the books that are being required. And the number of courses that have that noun studies is just amazing, John. There are ethnic studies, black studies, women's studies, peace studies, environmental studies, leisure studies. And those are therapeutic classes. By that, I mean they're deductive. They're designed with a principal goal in mind at the very beginning of the class. And then the readings and the discussions amplify that predetermined goal. Whereas the idea of a university was inductive, that you had a class, say, in Shakespeare, or you had a class in the Seven Years' War, and you really didn't know what you would find at the end of the class. You would only discover with a professor who would guide you examples, readings, discussions, debates, nuances. And at the end of the class, if you came up with a conclusion or analysis that differed from the professor, it was fine. All he cared about or she cared about was how you developed your argument, not what the particular argument was, unless it was totally absurd. That's gone now. The professor instructs you how to think and what not to read and what not to think. And then you are supposed to, in order to get an A, end up in agreement with the professor's predetermined conclusion. That was what the purpose of the class was. And that's not teaching anybody anything. It's you can do that outside of the university. You don't need instructions to come to a predetermined conclusion.
You also identify the First Amendment, another institution that I, my life, have taken for granted as a way of talking about the experiment, the vineyard of liberty, the experiment we've been at for 240 years. Free expression, the right to dissent, the right to speak out in your fashion. Has that gone at the university level? Has that gone in the public to your measure?
Yeah, when I wonder whether it's gone, I just ask myself, what would happen if I was teaching a course at Harvard or Yale or Stanford or, you know, UC Berkeley or Ohio State, and I made the following pronouncements? I don't think it's necessarily certain that man-made warming will destroy the planet, or that it's entirely man-made given these variations in climate in the past that were natural. Or if I said it's likely there's two biological genders, we've always had transvestism, transsexualism, transgenderism, but this was a very minor or small number of the population. Or on the other hand, I've said identifying people by race or identifying yourself primarily by your race as essential to who you are rather than secondary to who you are, it has a bad historical precedent. That's tribalism, and we know where that leads. If I had said any of those three general statements, I think students in the class would have reported me. I would be cited, and if I was not told you're going to lose your class, then I would have probably a boycott by the students. And I would be in deep trouble if I was on tenured or going up as an associate professor to full professor. I think everybody understands that. And that's why people in the university keep quiet about it, because of the ramifications.
So,
and I watch it every day on a campus.
The First Amendment then is gone on campus. It might
yes.
be practiced elsewhere. You and I are having a conversation that is filled with dissent, but we don't
yes.
expect to get denounced. On campus, you do.
Yes, but also, John, the Bill of Rights are too. If you were accused of a particular type of crime, let's say that a subordinate or a colleague thought that you had been sexually insensitive or harassing, you would not have the rights of due process. You would not have the right to bring in counsel. You would not have right to know who your accuser is. You would not have the right to bring in evidence in a regular hearing. You would be suspended probably automatically. And then later you would have a so-called campus trial. Nor do the civil rights statutes apply of 1965. If you go to a particular place on campus, or if you enter a particular dorm, you can be told you're not allowed here because of your race. That's illegal in the United States. So the only way that these universities are going to change, if someone brave enough says, look, if you want federal funds, and if you want money from the government, and if you want your students to have federally guaranteed student loans, you're going to have to follow the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. To the extent you don't, you can do that as a private entity, but we're not going to subsidize it. And I think you'd see an enormous change very radically and quickly.
Victor Davis Hanson of the Hoover Institution, a senior fellow, teaches classics as well as writes about conflict. We're speaking of institutions in question by what is apparently a fad, but the fad is damaging to people's careers, to human beings. When we come back, the law under assault. I'm John Batchelor.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.